The Business and Planning Bill is swiftly making its way through Parliament, and that is not the only big news in the planning world this week, following Prime Minister Boris Johnson's pledge to build, build, build. I'm speaking to Hannah Quarterman, partner and head of planning at Hogan Lovells International, to look in detail at the bill and the interesting times ahead for the sector. Thanks for joining me, Hannah.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So, dealing first with the bill, the biggest change put forward is the extension of the time period for implementing planning permissions. Can you outline how that will operate and why it's so important in the current climate?
Well, from the very beginning of lockdown, the development industry had immediately identified the risk of planning permissions expiring as being one of its biggest challenges. And this was a risk to developers. You know, they would be losing planning permissions that they'd invested a lot of time and money in, but also a risk to wider society, who would find themselves losing much needed housing or modern office buildings, which have got these planning permissions and things which could support the local community. And the reason that this risk arose is multiple. In the early days, there was obviously the confusion about whether people could actually be on site and be carrying out works to carry out planning permission. But that's been replaced with some uncertainty about the longer term outlook. And being quite frank, many of those people who are carrying out development can't currently risk exposing themselves to the significant costs involved in pressing ahead with significant projects at the moment. And there are many people who are, you know, big household names who are facing acute cash flow issues as their rental income drops, and they're simply not in a position to be able to forge ahead with planning permissions. So to address this, the government have introduced an automatic extension for planning permissions, which would otherwise have expired between the date when these provisions come into effect and the 31st of December this year. Instead of expiring when they would have done before, they now expire on the 1st of April 2021. And this gives developers some really vital breathing space to look at their projects, make sure that everything's in line, and ensure that there's some more certainty about the future before committing the significant costs involved. It is worth noting that this automatic extension only applies to permissions which haven't expired when the relevant provisions come into force. And that's not until 28 days after the Act received royal assent. So at the moment, there are some developers with permissions which expire imminently who find themselves in a slight case of limbo, not knowing whether or not they'll benefit from this automatic extension.
So does the bill have anything to say about what can be done for those permissions?
Where a permission has expired before the relevant provisions come into effect, there is an alternative procedure, but it's a lot more complicated. Mm. And this is one of the reasons it took so long for the government to introduce these measures, because there was some hesitancy about how to treat permissions which have already expired, because technically they don't really exist anymore. Mm. So instead of having this automatic extension, a developer has to apply for an extension, and they can do that for any planning permissions which expired since the 23rd of March 2020. And this application is an application for what's deemed an additional environmental approval. Now, one slightly techie thing which is interesting to note is that only someone with an interest in the land can apply for that. And certainly on, you know, lots of the schemes we deal with, it's not at all unusual for the land holding entity to not be the same as the person who's carrying out the development. So there are a few kind of procedural little hoops that people need to keep their eyes open for to make sure they don't fall down here. But once the application is in, it's a relatively quick, streamlined process. The council has 28 days to consider the application, although the parties can agree to extend that by up to 21 days. And if the council doesn't determine the application within that period, then the extension is deemed to be granted. Mm-hmm. However, it does get a little bit more complicated where you've got your more significant developments, your developments which have required an environmental impact assessment or an assessment pursuant to the habitat regulations. The new provisions are quite strict in respect of those types of developments, understandably, and they make it clear that an LPA cannot grant planning permission, so it cannot grant the extension, unless it is satisfied that the information relating to that environmental assessment or the habitat regs assessment is up to date. Now, in reality, this is probably going to be quite problematic, because if you think about the whole purpose of these provisions, it's to extend planning permissions which have already expired. As a minimum, most of those planning permissions will have had a 3-year implementation period. And given the amount of time it takes to have planning applications determined these days, The information going into those reports is almost certainly well over 3 years old. And so local authorities are going to find themselves in this position of being faced with a pretty clear diktat from the government that they should be trying to find a way to grant these extensions, but at the same time having to weigh that against this statutory bar on them being able to do so, where the information isn't entirely up to date at the moment. So it will be interesting to see where that balance is struck and whether you find local planning authorities trying to encourage developers to kind of update some of their information to get them out of this problem. Being cynical, it also introduces a risk for developers because it does give local planning authorities a pretty easy reason to refuse this extension if the scheme is something controversial and the LPA would be more than happy for it not to proceed after all.
On matters like that, does it give the opportunity for local objectors to have another bite of the cherry almost in terms of putting forward their views against development?
There's no right for public residents to make representations. And there's no kind of public consultation requirements. However, as we've seen in many spheres, there are many members of the public are very happy to challenge decisions which they're not happy with. And so there would be the possibility for members of the public to challenge an extension if they thought that hadn't properly been granted. Mm. Yeah. And you can see that it's going to be the controversial schemes are going to be the ones that require the environmental information. And so there is still quite a lot of scope for risk going forward for some of the developers.
Mm. Now, the extension for implementation of planning permissions also applies to reserved metals approval, which I imagine will also be very important to developers.
Absolutely. And I have to say, speaking to quite a number of people we work with, there was a general sigh of relief when we saw that this had been picked up. Because for some time, there was real nervousness that the importance of reserved matters approvals had been forgotten to an extent by the government. And this ran a really serious risk of within large, complex, multi-phase developments, losing a particular phase within that scheme, which would have undermined the comprehensive and cohesive nature of the redevelopment which was coming forward. And so instead, as I say, it has been addressed for RMAs. And what we have now is an automatic extension for the deadline for submitting reserve matters approvals, and in some cases for actually implementing the works within a particular phase. Where the deadline for submitting a reserved matters application is between the 23rd of March 2020 and the 31st of December 2020, that is again extended to be the 1st of April 2021. As for implementing detailed permissions, the position is slightly more complicated there, where it's an implementation deadline as opposed to an application deadline. If your implementation deadline has passed, you need to go through a similar process as you do for detailed applications, i.e. seeking to extend that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As per the kind of the main, the detailed provisions, the local planning authority again has 28 days, which can be extended. And if it's not dealt with, then the extension is deemed to be granted. And this is a really important allowance because for a lot of the reserved matters applications, as I've said, they form a crucial part of broader schemes. But also in many cases, it's giving developers kind of the breathing space to look at what they were going to be applying for in terms of reserved matters applications. Mm. Just giving everyone a little bit of time to reassess what the new normal is going to look like and what they think is going to be the best form of development to come forward in the future.
Yeah, because I imagine people will be making quite a lot of changes in terms of, retail development and types of residential development and the use of space and all that kind of things in the light of the challenges that COVID-19 has posed.
Absolutely. People with residential schemes are looking again at what are the new priorities which have come out for a lot of members of society around the spaces that they live in. There's been this huge emphasis on public open space. People have really engaged with their outside areas. And so allowing developers the time to make sure that what they're bringing forward actually responds to those changing priorities is really, really important. Mm. Putting aside all of the imperatives about delivering houses, we all want the best types of houses to get delivered. And so it's great that there's now that opportunity to reassess. And likewise with office developments, the way we use offices has been shifting for years. And that's likely to, you know, to continue now. It's not entirely clear yet what that shift is going to look like. And so having, again, having some time to look at that is useful. There are those that argue that an extension just to April perhaps doesn't give you quite enough time for it to reflect on what the changed form of development needs to look like. But all the same, I think that there's gratitude within the industry that the provisions that we have been introduced.
Yes, so that adds a degree of flexibility for developers, which is very welcome. And another way that flexibility has been introduced in this bill is in respect of planning appeals. Can you explain how the proposed changes there will work in practice?
So until now, when you have brought a planning appeal, you had to elect or were assigned one of three very different procedures by which your appeal would be determined. So you found yourself either dealing with everything on the papers, in a written reps, at a formal inquiry, or a hearing, which was kind of somewhere between the two in terms of formality. And one of the problems which has arisen historically is that you could have a single particularly complex issue, for example, something like the impact on daylight and sunlight, or something around heritage, which all parties agreed required oral evidence and the inspector to be able to fully interrogate the witnesses. But because you had to elect to one procedure or another, that single complex matter meant that the whole matter had to be considered at an inquiry. And these inquiries therefore became very lengthy, and it would take a very long time to secure an inquiry date. The changes to the law will allow a lot more flexibility, and there's been a pilot exploring how this could work. And it allows the parties to agree which particular matters need to be considered orally, so in an inquiry setting. And where there's simpler matters, where they can simply be dealt with with written reps or by a more informal hearing method. And over years, there's been a kind of a slow blurring of the boundaries between hearings and inquiries to a certain extent. But this really formalises that and allows everyone to ensure that different topics are being dealt with in the most appropriate way. And it really allows methods of determination to be tailored to the facts of the particular appeal. And this is a really, really good move forward, because hopefully it should speed things up, and it should speed things up in terms of the actual duration of inquiries. If you need to consider fewer matters, then you need fewer sitting days, and that in turn should speed up the time it takes to receive an inquiry date. At the moment, it's you know a real bugbear for appellants when they're weighing up the pros and cons of bringing forward an appeal. The amount of time it can take if you're going to end up inquiry weighs heavily against it. Whereas now, given that there should be fewer and shorter inquiry durations, you should be able to get a date much quicker. And it should mean that issues can be dealt with in a much more proportionate manner. And, you know, of all of the changes that have come out, this is a permanent one, unlike some of the other changes. And it's really good to see that the opportunity has been taken to enshrine a really positive step going forward on a permanent basis.
And you mentioned temporary measures, and another additional one in the bill is a simplified process for developers to extend construction hours to meet, obviously, the post-lockdown challenges that they face. So how does that work?
So many planning permissions have restrictions on construction hours, and those can either be embedded within the planning permission itself in the wording of a condition, or there could be a condition requiring some kind of plan or strategies to be submitted, which also contains restrictions on construction hours, construction management plans, that kind of thing. And the new provisions allow anyone who has an interest in the land, again, to be able to make an application to vary those construction hours, you know, with a clear view that some of the construction time which has been lost during the lockdown, or the delays which are, you know, have and continue to accrue because of social distance working, can be caught up by people working longer hours on site. And in particular, the variation sought can either seek to extend working hours on any given day, or can even introduce working on days when it wasn't otherwise permitted. So for example, lots of planning permissions have quite stringent restrictions on construction works during the weekend, and that can all now be revised. In terms of the procedure, that again itself is quite simple. It's very slimmed down compared to the usual procedure that you would need to vary the conditions or any of the documents associated with a planning permission. And it's interesting that it's actually very clearly expressed that it should all be done electronically. Again, another sign of this move to make the planning system a little bit more nimble. Mm. When the application goes in, it must be very clear what change is being sought. And there's a kind of a 14-day window before that change can take effect. And it has to stop by the 1st of April 2021, although that date can be revised by the government going forward. And you know, as per the extensions to the planning permission, if the local authority doesn't respond within that 14-day window, then the variation is deemed to be granted. But one of the things which is quite interesting is that the government have actually kind of de-risked this process considerably, in that they've made it very clear that what can't happen is a developer seeks a variation to their construction hours. And the local authority takes this as an opportunity to reopen the discussion around construction hours generally. And it very clearly states that no variation can prevent you from working during hours when that was otherwise allowed. So in short terms, there's nothing to be lost really here from trying to do this if a developer does want to extend their hours, because they know that the worst case scenario is that they end up with what they've got. Mm. Hopefully they will end up with significantly expanded construction hours. One of the things that we are finding in practice at the moment, though, is that there is a slight tension where local authorities are, even before the introduction of these measures, were supportive about the principle of extending construction hours, because they very much recognise the need to catch up the lost development time. But they need to weigh that against the impact that that's going to have on local residents and others. Quite a lot of residents around larger schemes who have been relatively vocal in explaining how unhappy they are about the prospect of extended weekend working hours and works extending into the evening. So there will need to be some kind of balancing of the two different interests.
I imagine that's exacerbated by the fact that more residents are also spending more time at home during ordinary construction hours. So they're already hearing more of the noise, more of the week, and therefore not brilliantly happy about it extending into the weekend or the evenings.
Absolutely. And we have schemes where we've been exploring this for a number of weeks, and those are exactly the kind of points that the residents are making. Mm. Especially at this time of year, it's hot, they want to be able to open their windows, but when they do open their windows, they're presented with this construction noise, which up until now they've been oblivious to, because they've been happily in their office some miles away during the working week. And so it's shining a light on this kind of shifting priorities and the need to balance different interests. Suddenly people who are at home a lot more are a lot protective of that home environment. Mm. But on the other hand, we do need to see these homes coming forward, and in order to avoid a backlog forming in the development of the homes, there needs to be a certain amount of give. And so again, the local planning authorities find themselves in that enviable position of having to balance those two competing interests.
Are there any other highlights to pick out in the bill?
So there are some other really important provisions relating to things around licensing, pavement licenses, off-sales licenses, and that kind of thing, which have been heralded as a really positive move for those in the food and beverage industry, so bars and cafes, to enable them to make the most of their outside space and operate on pavements and within the highway. And this is seen as a really kind of key step in order to kind of get us all outside, get us socialising again, get us investing in the economy and getting these businesses, making sure that these businesses can get back on their feet. However, these provisions have been pretty controversial, because there's a lot of concern about the impact that this is going to have on the amenity of local residents. And although the draft provisions do provide some protections about ensuring that there's always enough space to use the pavement and that kind of thing, there is still quite a lot of concern by residents and by the MPs in terms of the actual committee debates, about how this is going to play out in practice. You know, we've all seen the stories about the, you know, drinking in parks and the increase in litter and antisocial behaviour. And so this has actually, in many ways, become the most controversial part of the bill and has deflected some of the attention away from the extensions of planning permissions, etc., because it's very clear to see that this could have a much more direct impact on a lot of local residents.
But overall, it sounds like you're quite positive about the bill.
I think the bill introduces some really essential changes, and I think it has brought some really positive changes in. As I touched on before, I think there's an argument that in some ways it doesn't go far enough, for example, around the extensions. When you're looking at significant development, it takes a long time to get everything in place. It's not just a case of pressing go and being able to start on site. And so there is some feeling that an extension to April next year perhaps isn't long enough. That is countered slightly by the fact that the government has included provisions in there which lets us extend any of these dates anyway. So we might not find ourselves looking at the 1st of April 2021 as being the deadline for implementation of whole swathes of schemes. That could get changed. But with that comes the nervousness of some within the industry about how proactive the government will be about actually extending that and at what point in time they will do it. How much notice will developers have that actually they don't need to implement by the end of March? They've actually got an extra few months. So I think there's some really, really good stuff in here. I think there are some technical issues which need to work their way out, as there always is when you have planning changes. But I think it's definitely put us in a better position than we were before this bill came out last week.
And it's already completed its various stages in the House of Commons, and it now moves to the House of Lords for consideration. So what do you predict is a likely timescale for the bill to receive royal assent? And do you foresee the House of Lords making any significant changes?
So the bill is due to be considered by the Lords on the 6th of July, and I would expect that the progress through the Lords will reflect that of the progress through Commons. There is a real imperative to get this to achieve royal assent before recess, which is on the 21st of July. So I do not think that there will be substantial changes made. As I said, the most controversial elements are around these licensing issues and the impact that's going to have on local residents. So it may be that there's some pushback on some of those points. But, you know, being blunt, I suspect that everyone will accept that given the very, very limited time available, the most important thing is that we get this legislation enacted and then we deal with any of the practical implications going forward. So I suspect that this will be, you know, this will be law within the next few weeks, and it will look largely as it did when it was first published.
Now, the bill isn't the only development in planning in the last week. We also have the snappily named the Town and Country Planning Permitted Development and Miscellaneous Amendments England Coronavirus Regulations 2020, which made amendments to the Town and Country Planning General Permitted Development England Order 2015, most notably creating a new permitted development right for additional stories on purpose-built blocks of flats. How welcome is that move, and how much use do you think will be made of it in practice?
Well, I think, you know, within the development industry, you know, we always welcome additional flexibility. And this has introduced an interesting alternative way to create new homes and to add value to existing assets that people have by developing out further the blocks of flats that they have. But, you know, I do think that there is some nervousness around the impacts of these, especially from those outside of the development industry, and, you know, particular concerns about the unintended consequences that this could have, for example, in terms of townscape impact and the impact on neighbours. Having said that, the new permitted development rights are conditional on securing prior approval. And in this case, there are so many factors which the local planning authority is entitled to consider when deciding to grant that approval that the local planning authority actually does have quite a lot of control. So in particular, you know, they're allowed to take into effect impact on external appearance and impact on the amenity of the existing buildings and neighbouring premises. And in particular, they're allowed to take into account the impact on overlooking privacy and loss of light. And These are kind of really difficult matters to grapple with, even when you have all of the documentation that goes in with a planning application. And so, in effect, this gives the local authority quite a lot of control and potentially quite a lot of scope to limit the usability of these permitted development rights. And so I suspect that there will be a lot of people who want to explore the attitude of their particular local planning authority and will try to make the use of these. But how useful the rights actually prove to be will very much depend upon the willingness of local planning authorities to kind of play ball, as it were, because they have so many tools available to them to erode some of the benefits of the slimmed down prior approval permitted development process, that in many cases it may be that a separate planning application becomes necessary anyway.
Okay, and of course on Tuesday we had the Prime Minister promising radical planning reforms, extending PDRs to allow conversion of vacant commercial buildings into residential and to get developers to build. So what do you make of the Prime Minister's project speed?
Well, you know, as somebody who kind of lives and breathes as part of the development industry, seeing this kind of enthusiasm for building is always attractive. It's always great to hear that the government wants to get homes delivered and wants to see investment coming forward. You know, investment in infrastructure is, you know, always a relatively predictable way to inject cash and activity into the economy, and, you know, therefore is really welcome. But I have to say that this enthusiasm needs to be tempered slightly by making sure that we are building the right thing in the right place in the right way, and that we're not being so carried away with the desire to build, but we're not ensuring that the outputs are the right thing for the country. And so, for example, the residential related permitted development rights are quite broad, and as we've seen with office to residential permitted development rights, adopting this slightly deregulated approach can have unfortunate and foreseen consequences. And, you know, there have been all sorts of commentary in the press around the quality of living accommodation which has arisen as a result. And although hopefully some of these lessons have been learned, there are still going to remain challenges if the government expects large quantities of residential accommodation to come forward as a result of permitted development rights. So, for example, there's a real risk that the kind of the social and physical infrastructure around the vacant commercial buildings, which they're saying can be converted into residential units, isn't the type of social and physical infrastructure that you need for residential development. And so you end up with this kind of this infrastructure gap between what there needs to be and what you have. And a gap around who's expected to fund that. And as I say, you then have issues around quality of design. And once you start going down this road and you start looking at how do we address these issues and how do we ensure that we're having good quality development, you start putting in so many extra loops which need to be satisfied that, you know, as per the other permitted development rights we were just discussing, you run the risk of actually undermining the benefits of having permitted development rights, because you're basically going through the same procedural hoops as you would have been for a planning application. And it's also kind of really important to my mind that, as I said, the speed and efficiency in securing these consents and delivering projects doesn't come at the expense of the quality, both in terms of the projects, but the scrutiny to which they're put. It feels to me like there's already a kind of a deep mistrust within large sections of society around development and the development industry. And I wouldn't want to see that be exacerbated by a really vocally expressed government desire to get things moving. We cannot afford for the general public perception to be that developers can do whatever they want in the interest of development, because that doesn't help us in the long run. So I guess I really welcome the aims, but I think this has to be handled very carefully, and I'd be interested to see how it works out in practice.
Indeed, and a paper is anticipated next month that will set out the plans for reform of the planning system. What does it most need to cover, in your opinion, and is wide-scale reform even what the planning system really needs?
I mean, we've been here so many times before, haven't we? It seems that no government is capable of getting through a parliamentary session without promising wholescale review of the planning system. And being frank, given all of the challenges facing the development industry and the economy more generally at the moment, I'm not sure that now really is the best time to be taking the planning system back to the drawing boards. One of the most crippling factors that we've come across in the last few months has been uncertainty. And we really don't need more uncertainty to be brought into the equation now by this promised change to the planning system. Having said that, I'll try to be positive, try to be an optimist. And you know, this time it might be different. And we, you know, if the government this time really could fix all the problems of the planning system, then it would be great for them, you know, for them to do that. And I think everybody would welcome that. But the problem is, what one person sees as an issue which needs to be fixed will differ dramatically from what others see as the issue which needs to be fixed. So I think it would be nothing short of a miracle for the government to actually find a way to balance the competing interests that people have. And so, you know, if I was in, you know, if I had free rein and I was carrying out this kind of root and branch review of what was going on, then I would say we need to grapple with the politically unpopular points. And that's why, to an extent, I don't think we really will get to the bottom of the issues. So things like the role of the Greenbelt is a really obvious but particularly emotive example where it's really unlikely that consensus will ever be achieved. I do think that there's kind of unanimity around the need to speed up the process, and I would completely support any steps to speed up the process. But again, there will be really different views on how that can be achieved and what speeding up the planning process looks like. So In my experience, the delays which arise are often around under-resourced planning departments or the time it takes to engage with the community and address community concerns, or the negotiations that you have to carry out to ensure that appropriate mitigation is delivered. And it isn't obvious which of those you can easily fix to speed up planning. Nobody wants to lose the involvement of the local community because that just breeds resentment. Nobody wants to simplify how you deal with mitigation because we've tried that with SIL and it only gets us so far. And unless the government suddenly finds another big bag of money, we're not going to be able to address the under-resourced planning departments. So I have a fear that in reality, what we're going to end up doing is moving around the parts of the puzzle in the same way as we've seen before. And none of the true reform will be able to come forward. And you know, I think in order to fix planning, you do need to go back to basics. And being frank, that's such a mammoth task that I don't genuinely think there's an appetite for that at the moment, whatever the rhetoric is.
No, not with everyone being busy with coronavirus and then Brexit. The government's time is going to be quite tight.
Absolutely. There are just so many big things to consider right now. And the planning system is so easily to hold out there as a political football because everybody can pick it apart. Everybody finds issues with it, whether it's a developer, whether it's local residents, whether it's your interest groups to protect the countryside, etc. But the problem is, because everybody has an opinion, it's going to be impossible to please everyone. And I'm just not sure that once they start this job, the government will have the time or the appetite to finish it.
Well, let's see what the detail is if we get this paper next month, and perhaps we can talk again to see what they're proposing.
That's fantastic.